It's 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Parental prerogative or chaos in the classroom? Supporters and opponents of a new education law have competing descriptions of it. The law requires school districts to come up with alternative coursework when parents object either to the way a subject is taught or the books and other materials used. Governor Lynch vetoed the bill last year, but when the legislative session reopened this month, that veto was overridden. So now districts are looking at what this law may mean for them. For example, what if a parent would rather have their child learn to read using phonics? Or what to do when a parent objects to the teaching of evolution? Or on the other side, if a teacher refers to the Bible in discussing how the world was created. Some district officials say they're not worried. They already have policies in place to deal with these situations, and they don't expect many of these requests to come up anyway. But others fear the law will create huge headaches, such as who develops the alternative materials, what students do while that coursework is being developed, and how teachers ensure they're complying with state curriculum requirements. Today in The Exchange, we look at this new law and reaction to it. We begin with State Representative J.R. Hole. He's a Republican from Dunbarton and the lead sponsor of this measure. And Representative Hole, thanks for being with us.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for having me on the show.
Why did you think this law was needed?
Actually, the bill started out a little bit broader in scope, which eventually, by the time it made it through the legislative process, was whittled down to one where parents can have, if they object to material being taught in school, can have some greater say. We've seen a number of years, over the last number of years, parents who have actually had to pull their students out of school over certain material because it was objectionable.
What type of objections did they typically have? And you're saying this happened more than once then?
Yeah, unfortunately, the one case that's most recent was one in Bedford where it was over objectionable material in a home finance course taught at the high school level. And in that case, the book that was being taught was Nickeled and Dimed in America, and it was just so offensive to the parents in terms of values that they asked and eventually pulled their son out of the school.
Go ahead, please.
I think the bill goes further than just addressing morally objectionable material. And there was a couple of good examples that were brought to the floor. I think it also, as drafted and as passed, addresses academically inferior material as well. And I think as your show started out, right, some parents may want their children to learn through phonics for a reading program as compared to a whole language reading program. And both would meet state standards, but why can't the parents who are the consumers in the market, right? It's their children, their tax dollars are actually being spent on this, have some greater say in the curriculum.
Let me ask you a couple quick questions, if I could. You mentioned the book, first of all, in Bedford, used in the finance course, Nickel and Dimed by Barbara Ehrenreich. Mm-hmm. A lot of our listeners have probably heard of this book. It describes the struggles of low-wage workers. Barbara Ehrenreich goes underground and lives as a minimum-wage worker. What was it that parents found objectionable in that book?
I'm not completely certain. I believe it had to do with the characterizations of one religious figure. But it was one that I don't think the values were necessarily the values of more of the mainstream America either.
They felt it was anti-capitalist and they didn't like the depictions of Jesus. That's what I read in the press anyway.
Yeah, those two things came up. My understanding, I didn't read the book, right? So it would be presumptuous to make comments on it. But my understanding was it had a very Marxist slant to it, which is not necessarily something that was being accepted by the parents in Bedford.
I want to ask you also about what you said, coursework that may be academically inferior. Maybe this isn't about social values, but more that just you don't feel the coursework is the appropriate way to teach a certain subject. How does a teacher deal with that, Representative Hole? If I come in and I say, you know, I don't like the way that you're teaching everyday math is the way that that's the course book that everybody in New Hampshire uses. I have two kids in the public schools. I don't like everyday math. I don't understand it. And I have a hard time helping my kids with the homework. So please, Mrs. Smith, could you use something else besides everyday math?
Well, so the law, this recently enacted statute, is very clear, right? The administration shall require local school districts to adopt a policy that will let a parent object to the material and then work out an agreed-upon alternative and then pay for that alternative. So we've got a couple things in place that have to happen in this process. The parent has to say, you know, I really don't like this material. I don't like the quality of it. I don't like, and a good example would be phonics versus whole language. When I went to school, whole language was a great idea. Everybody thought it was the greatest thing, except they realized people don't learn to spell at the end. Because really, phonics is the basis for people being good writers and understanding the construction of the actual words, not just the construction of sentences. So parents have to object to the material. That's the first step. Then they have to go to the local school board and say, you know, I really don't like this. Can we come up with something else? And at that point, the two parties sit around the table and work out what the alternative is. It could be the student goes into a study hall for that period, and the parents pay for an outside learning center. This is happening in Bedford in the Sylvan Learning Center is on the map right now. So I think there's a number of options. Why does it have to be that the additional material is actually taught by the school system? Maybe they can't come up with an agreement that for new material. But the parent says, then I'll go to a private school or I'll go to a private tutor. Will that work? And that may meet all the requirements.
How does a teacher, Representative Hole, ensure that, you know, my kid who's in the separate classroom and is using Hole language and all the other kids who are using phonics, I'm just using this as an example, how does he or she make sure that everybody's staying on track if a couple kids are studying something different?
So at the end of the day, there is certain key elements that all kids need to know how to do in the domain of math, right? They need to add and subtract, multiply, and eventually get to fractions and mixed numbers. And you can show proof of having learned and mastered the material by any testing standards, right? So I think what happens is in the elementary school, if a parent opts out, they can turn around and promote the child onto the next grade, and he or she, the student in this case, should be competent to do the work at the next level.
All right. Well, Representative Hole, we've got two guests in the studio, and we're going to hash this out all hour and take calls. But I really appreciate you kicking this off for us this morning. Thank you.
Great. Sure enough. Thank you.
Bye-bye. That's J.R. Hole, Republican representative from Dunbarton and sponsor of the new education law that we're looking at today, as we heard, concerning parental requests for alternative coursework for their kids. Let's hear from you, too. How do you think this new law will affect your local public schools? Should parents have more of a say in classroom materials? Do you see this as creating confusion or enhancing parental choice in public education? Give us a call. Tell us what you think. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Our guests this hour are Scott Moody. He's Vice President of Policy at Cornerstone Policy Research. And Scott, it's nice to meet you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Also with us, Rhonda Wesolowski, President of the New Hampshire Chapter of the National Education Association, with 39 years' experience in the classroom. And Rhonda, good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much, Laura.
Well, and Rhonda, we heard from J.R. Hole, the sponsor of this bill. Your broad thoughts on this law. As I understand, the NEA is objecting to it in the strongest possible terms.
That is correct. Like much of the legislation this year, Laura, this bill wasn't well researched by the legislative body as a whole, and it has wide-ranging ramifications down the road. Among them are some of the questions that need to be asked. For instance, what does the whole class do while the curriculum is in limbo with a parent's objection? But the biggest question is, when a parent objects, there's no definition of what the objection is. I heard you ask Representative Hole what the objection was to nickel and dime. But if you read the law, it just says that the parent has determined the material is objectionable. So therefore, they can come in and say the material is objectionable and we need you to develop a new curriculum or a new offer something different in its place. And then they say that the parent will pay for it. Well, does the parent pay for it for the whole class? Does the parent pay for it for just their child? And whatever happened to the idea that professional educators know what they're doing? Professional educators have been educated, trained, certified, and are highly qualified to teach as a requirement by the state of New Hampshire. With this new law, any parent, qualified or not, can veto any lesson plan on any grounds. That has way wide open ramifications for education in our state.
Well, and I've got lots of follow-up questions for you, Rhonda, but I want to let Scott in too. Scott, what do you think? Your organization sponsored this law. Why do you think that this was necessary?
Well, fundamentally, it boils down to the question of parental rights. You know, at the end of the day, and with all due respect to our educators who work very hard to educate New Hampshire's children, at the end of the day, the responsibility to educate a child is his or her parents. And they're the ones who feel, you know, who spend all this time with their children, far more time than the, you know, 8 hours a day they spend in a classroom, whether or not they're getting the education they deserve. And based on that knowledge, they can determine whether or not they need to look for alternatives. And frankly, I think this is good for the school system. You know, competition is good in the private sector. It's going to be good in the education sector as well. And in New Hampshire right now, we're seeing a decline in school-aged children. The number of children under age 18 last decade fell by 8%. If that parent feels that they need to pull their child out of the school system and put them into a private school, that's going to hurt the school system as a whole. This will give parents other options and potentially keep that child in the school system.
What do you think about Rhonda's point that, you know, I don't know how to teach. I don't know what the best way to teach language or math is. Teachers spend years and years getting professional degrees, and they really know how to teach kids. What do you think about that? I'm just curious.
Well, every kid learns differently. And when you have a classroom, and like I said, you know, I'm giving all credit to teachers and the tasks they have to deal with. But sometimes some children are a little bit slower. Sometimes they're a little bit faster than their class. And sometimes the material just isn't appropriate. Who's in a better position to know? A parent who spends far more time with that child than the teachers do. And sometimes they can alert teachers. And now this gives another option for parents to come and constructively work with the school system and say, hey, we need to do something else with my child.
Lots more to talk about, and we want to invite our listeners also to join us. 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Today in the exchange, we're talking about a new law that gives parents more control over what types of course material and coursework their kids are given in school. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 1-800-892-6477. We'll be right back.
Good morning. It's 9:19, and support for NHPR comes from UR members and from thelobbynh.com, the new online source for New Hampshire business and politics, found at thelobbynh.com. And the Wealth Management Group at Merrimack County Savings Bank, Trust and Wealth Management Services, provided by advisors committed to your financial needs, themerrimack.com. More on parental prerogative in public education on the exchange on NHPR and the 10 on the Diane Rehm Show Super PACs in the 2012 presidential race. New Hampshire weather today, snow mixing with some rain and sleet this afternoon, up to an inch or so accumulation likely for most of the state, from 1 to 3 inches in the North Country. Highs today, 35 to 40. Tonight, winter weather advisory in effect for the North Country till 5 tomorrow morning. Sleet or rain likely with a chance of snow after midnight for the North Country. Any showers across the rest of the remainder of the state will end tonight. Lows from 30 to 35 degrees. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're examining a new law that allows parents to request alternative coursework from the school system when they find certain materials objectionable. We invite you to join us at 1-800-892-6477 or send a short email to exchange@nhpr.org. Also, The Exchange is now on Facebook. You can go to our page and join the conversation there. Our guests are Scott Moody, Vice President of Policy at Cornerstone Policy Research, which supports the new law. Rhonda Wesolowski, president of the New Hampshire chapter of the National Education Association, which objects strongly to this new law. Again, our number 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Rhonda, so under current practice, since this law just was passed, what rights do parents have if there's some course material that they find objectionable? Is there a recourse under the current system?
Well, I would have, when you were asking earlier what would we want in the end, I would have hoped that the parent would come in and work with the school system if there was an objection to something. Currently, the education curriculum that's been developed and approved by the school board does have means of addressing children that learn at different rates, as Scott was bringing up. Some children learn quickly, some learn slower. It's up to the expert in the classroom, the teacher, to decide what differentiated instruction to provide to those students. Representative Hole, earlier mentioned the phonics whole language debate that, you know, is nationwide. It's far-ranging. But most classroom teachers in the lower grades, where children are learning to read, do provide instruction in reading skills, which includes phonics, and they also immerse their children in enrichment programs that incorporate whole language. So this is already going on in most classrooms today. And that's why I said earlier that it wasn't widely researched by the legislative body as a whole.
Here's a blog post from Representative Hole on a blog called New Hampshire Parents First. He says, yes, the existing appeals process for parents who object to a public school program or textbook, he says it exists, but he says it's difficult and time-consuming and designed to derail any meaningful opposition. Frequently, it's costly and ineffective. So he's saying, sure, there may be systems in place, but they're not working real well.
Well, I say that this new law is designed to derail public education.
To derail public education. Sure. That's a big statement.
Mm-hmm. And it means that people are getting involved who should not be involved. They are not the experts. I would no more go to a surgeon and tell him how to operate on someone than I would step into a classroom and tell a teacher how she should be teaching the children.
Here's an email from Rob, and again, the address exchange@nhpr.org. He says, if certain parents want that degree of control over what their children are taught, shouldn't they just homeschool their kids instead of forcing everyone else to invest time and money changing the curriculum to conform to their beliefs? Scott Moody, I'll throw that one to you, and Rob, thanks for the email.
Well, you know, derailing the public school is, I think, a very catastrophic term and an unfortunate term. What we're talking about here is giving parents the right to determine whether or not they're getting the proper education. And, you know, again, with all due respect to the teachers, it's the parents who ultimately have to make sure their child is properly educated. And, you know, right now your only recourse, true recourse, is to take your child out of public schools and put them into a private school. That's just simply not an option for a lot of parents. I mean, you're already paying your property taxes, which are a huge burden. Under this new law, they're still going to be responsible for paying the alternative curriculum material and teaching time. So actually, it'll actually result in more money to the school system and making sure that student stays in the school system. To me, that's preserving the public school system, not dismantling it.
So could even provide a source of innovation, like some say charter schools charter schools do? Is that what you're saying, Scott?
Well, it will open up a degree of flexibility to the public schools that they don't currently have right now, except with the appeals process, which, you know, may be clunky, maybe not. But this firmly puts the option in the parents' hands.
What do you think, Rhonda?
Well, I have a question on that. And it again, it goes back to there are so many questions about this law. How many parents can object? Can each parent come in and decide that they are providing an alternative so you have up to six or seven different alternatives going on in this classroom? Is that the opportunity or the flexibility that Scott is talking about? I don't know.
It's often said, though, today that, as you have both said, that kids learn at different styles. They all have different abilities and ways of learning and so forth. So is this an opportunity, Rhonda, to address that concern that sometimes sends parents into homeschooling or sends them to charter schools? Is this an opportunity for improvement?
I think the opportunity has been there with what's going on in the classrooms. I think that we do provide a balanced, eclectic program that involve all modalities of learning and different types of engagement for each and every student. I think that's happening today.
Our phone number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us a short email, the address exchange@nhpr.org. And let's take some calls, both of you. Matt is calling in from Nashua. Hi, Matt. You're on the exchange. Go ahead.
Thank you so much for taking my call. I do appreciate it. I am a teacher. I have been teaching for almost 10 years in two separate states, and I'm not from New England originally. And I noticed that this was the same problem with the educational system in both New Hampshire and in Missouri, which is not all, but a lot of parents do not take an interest in their children's education. They take a look at the public school systems, and they think that the public school systems are either A, a babysitting tool, or B, if the kid is not learning, it's entirely the parents or the teacher's fault. When the parents are making calls home saying, look, little Johnny, little Susie, little Betty is not going up to their potential, you know, how can you get involved? They don't want to get involved. And again, I'm not talking about all parents, but I'm talking about a good majority. So I don't think that this particular bill is doing anything but clogging up the teacher's desk with more bureaucracy and more stuff to sort through just to take more burdens off the parents, even though the idea of the bill is to get parents more involved.
All right, Matt, thanks a lot for calling in, especially given your experience. What about the burden, Scott Moody? The biggest complaint you hear from educators is already the time crunch, requirements to follow, tests to give, additional factors, family problems kids have. What about the time factor of requiring teachers and administrators to take time out to do this?
Well, you know, the school system, let's face it, is burdened with a lot of unnecessary mandates from both the state and federal government. And we're certainly more than supportive of rolling back those mandates that are just time drains on the school system. But when you're talking about something like parental rights, that's not a mandate. That's that strikes at the fundamental nature of what the school system is about. School system exists to serve a customer. That customer is the parents and their children. And, you know, taking, you know, the idea further about, you know, the professionals and, you know, being qualified to its logical conclusion, you know, by that standard, we should abolish local school boards because those people are elected by, you know, by the taxpayers and the voters of that town. They may not be qualified to determine budgetary issues of the school, the educational curriculum issues of the school, yet every town has a school board. You know, so to say that because you're not a professional, you shouldn't have input into the school system, I think is absurd.
Following up on what Matt said, Scott, he said, look, parents aren't really that invested or involved. They don't really know what's going on, and yet they complain to the teacher when, you know, little Johnny isn't getting straight A's. Would parents under this law be asserting their rights in an intellectual vacuum? They don't really know what the problem is or how to teach, but they know they don't like it, so darn it. They're going to make a fuss.
Well, let's keep in mind, this is going to be a process. The parent is not going to just come in here and just demand things. They're going to come in and have conversations with the teachers, with the principals, and they're going to be educated too, quite possibly, and maybe they just misunderstood something. So why would we want to discourage the parents who care the most from continuing to care? And this, by making people aware that this option is on the table, perhaps that will – in fact, motivate more parents to get involved with the school system in the long run.
And from what I understand, Rhonda, there is a process. I mean, parents aren't just going to willy-nilly come in and say, I don't like this, I want you to do this. There is a process. The school district has to say, you know, this is an approved curriculum. No, parents, I don't think that will necessarily work. Let's find something else.
I don't see in the law where that process is delineated. I see it where it says that the guardian or the parent determines if the material is objectionable. It doesn't say anything about a discussion with the school district over what was objectionable or how you could do it differently. I wish I could see that in the law, but I don't. It just says to me that people are willy-nilly going to say, no, I don't like this, and we need to provide something else.
Let's take another call. Thanks for that one, Matt. And Patty from Brentwood is up next. Hi, Patty. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to I'm not going to be too precise about the source because I happen to be in the car, but I wanted to give some information about two important studies that have been done that I think relate to this issue.
Go ahead, Patty. Yeah.
One, I believe, is out of Iowa State. These studies were maybe 12 to 15 years ago. And it was a very well-discussed study at the time that I heard about it that basically found that parents know their children's abilities and educational needs even more than teachers do. Teachers have a role, but they don't know as much about the individual children's needs as the parents do. And it was a pretty important study. And the other one, I believe, was by Maraca Gross out of Australia, but basically identified across many of the elementary into the junior high grades, at least, that the ability of students were at a range of at least five grades. There was a five-grade spread in a classroom of where the children were.
Wow.
So basically that means that somewhere near three-quarters of the students were being undertaught or were being taught required to function at a level above their ability.
Or below their ability.
Above or below their ability, most of them, most students in most classes.
So, Patty, the bottom line for you is this law sounds pretty good. Is that right?
I'm sorry.
The bottom line for you is this new law sounds pretty good. Is that the right message that I'm getting from you?
I think it's in the right direction. It probably needs some fine tuning. We had to homeschool our son because the school could not meet his needs, which were above average, but I mean not just above average, but they just couldn't meet his needs.
Well, Patty, thanks for calling. And what do you think, Rhonda? You know, boy, and I'm sure you've seen this given your many years in the classroom. Kids have so many different abilities, and yet here we arbitrarily lump them by age. Does this help address that?
Well, she's correct. You know, there is a wide variety of ability groupings within a classroom at the lower grade levels, and she's also correct in that most parents know exactly what their child needs or doesn't need. However, there are a lot of parents out there that really don't pay that kind of attention to their children, as Matt spoke of earlier. So you have one classroom teacher who has to meet the needs of all these children. The classroom teacher has been trained in ways to do that, trained in ways to group the students so that they don't even know they're grouping. It's not tracking students. In the elementary grades, you can walk into a classroom and see different groups of children working on different things all over the room. That's what's going on with differentiated instruction.
Scott, quick thoughts from you, and then back to our callers. Go ahead.
Well, I think, you know, in the ideal world, you know, every student would have their own teacher. But, you know, we simply can't afford that. And when you have large groupings of students, you know, New Hampshire already has one of the highest property tax burdens in the country. And, you know, we don't want to, you know, burden that by further shrinking classroom sizes. And we understand that by having these groupings, you're going to have different grade level, you know, learning abilities in each class. The parents that are most aware of this, and again, you know, we can't use keep using the excuse that some parents aren't aware. I mean, some drivers aren't aware, you know, while they're driving on the road, but we don't ban everybody, take away their rights to drive. Parents still have that fundamental right to determine. They spend the most time with the child. Those parents that are involved, I say let's keep them involved and engaged in the school system.
I want to invite another voice into our conversation. Joining us now on the phone is Mark Joyce, Executive Director of the New Hampshire School Administrators Association, which represents superintendents and school system officials. And Mark Joyce, always nice to have you. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Laura.
Well, real broadly, how are school system officials thinking about this new law?
Well, I think I agree with all of our members of the panel that it is a very complex law. Our position was that the law was really not necessary because of existing policies that do allow for the objection of any instructional materials, and virtually every school district has that. I agree with Representative Houle to say the original law was more sweeping, so I guess we are, you know, somewhat relieved that that didn't become law. However, we see some real challenges here with the implementation of this law. Primarily, we're hoping that folks, while perhaps the legislature rethinks its position and might further amend it and clarify it, we also are cautious not to over-interpret what the law allows. The law is quite specific in its wording, but still brings with it a myriad of problems in terms of implementation.
Well, what do you mean over-interpret, Mark?
Well, for example, it sets up not only the issues that Rhonda has raised about how you process these complaints and how you can manage that within the limited resources of a school, but also we hear people offering up that this would allow a parent to object to the teaching of evolution, as example, and instead request that their child teach intelligent design or other kind of religious-based positions. Well, that puts the school in a real difficult challenge because, as you know, by law, by federal law and the Constitution, a school cannot ever approve the promotion of one religion. So in that case, what does a school ultimately approve in this new policy? Because part of the policy says that while the parent may suggest an alternative and will pay for it, it still involves an agreement between the school and the parent.
So you're worried about some legal minefields there.
oh, I think it's fraught with a number of concerns about it, as especially if people interpret this law as broadly as some do.
Well, there are a lot of concerns from the Teachers Association and from you and others that we've read in the press. And yet, as you know, Mark, this did pass overwhelmingly in the State House, enough to override a veto. That's a big margin. So are people having some problems with the public schools that administrators like you need to look at? Maybe this law is a signal that the system for parents to participate wasn't good enough.
Well, I think that's a view held by certainly the majority of our current legislators. Whether it's founded in actual fact really doesn't matter, because it is their perception. And I agree with other speakers so far today that there are procedures in place to deal with that. Could we do a better job at it? Could we do a better job at perhaps educating people to that? I think probably yes, always. However, really at the core of this issue is a fundamental question about whether public education is an overall public good that should be controlled by all citizens, or is it a private right of every parent? Now, historically, for well over 100 years in our country, one of our greatest assets has been the public's control over public education. That whether a citizen has a child or not, or ever will, they have a good interest in having a well-educated citizen.
Are you saying,
I think, is what's at the core here.
Are you saying this threatens a well-educated citizenry?
I think it certainly fractures the belief that all children deserve a quality education that's publicly controlled. Now, it's forever been an issue that a parent has a right to alter that by providing private education, by supplementing the education at home. That question has never been debated or really questioned. However, now we're talking about changing the nature of public education based on the interest of one parent.
Well, Mark Joyce, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
My pleasure, Laura. Have a great day.
Bye-bye. That's Mark Joyce, Executive Director of the New Hampshire School Administrators Association, again talking about a brand new law that would allow parents who object to certain classroom materials to get an exception, have alternative coursework provided. We'll take more of your thoughts and comments at 1-800-892-6477 or email exchange@nhpr.org.
Today on Word of Mouth, Weight Watchers before and after. With so many Americans approaching obesity, the weight loss juggernaut has recalibrated its successful formula. And what to do with that pheasant in your freezer? The food editor from Field & Stream, yes, Field & Stream has a food editor, introduces Word of Mouth to venison Rubens and country fried antelope. Today at noon and again at 9 p.m. on NHPR.
The Diane Rehm Show, next at 10 on NHPR, where support comes from you, our members, and from the McAuliffe Shepherd Discovery Center in Concord, where teachers can attend professional development workshops every month. Information at starhop.com. And the New Hampshire Union Leader and newhampshire.com, opening up stories, events, and resources essential to living in the Granite State.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at the pros and cons of a new education law allowing parents to request different coursework for their children. Join us with your questions and comments, 1-800-892-6477. How do you think this new law will affect your local public schools? Should parents have a say in classroom materials? Or do you see this creating confusion in our schools? Our number, 1-800-892-6477. The email exchange@nhpr.org. And Wanda Wesolowski, Scott Moody, lots of calls and emails. So let's go to some of them. Here's one from KJ who says, do any other states have such a comprehensive opt-out law? I see other states permitting an opt-out of specific material like sex education or for other conversational topics. But for everything? What do you think about KJ's question, Scott? I'll turn to you.
I don't know the specifics of what other states have, but of course New Hampshire has always played to its own drum, if you will, obviously not being the only state not having a state income or sales tax, for example. So, I mean, I don't necessarily think that here we're necessarily looking at what other states are doing. We're simply reaffirming the right of parents to be the ultimate arbiters of their child's education.
And from what I understand, Rhonda, we're really not talking about sex education here. I mean, parents have always had a lot of say in this area. Is that correct?
I believe so, Laura. But again, you don't know what a parent's going to object to.
Well, what do you mean by that?
Well, as the law says, that a parent just has to determine that what's being taught, they object to it. You know, again, so many questions here. You know, questions in who's going to pay for the alternative? Who's going to pay for the alternative to be developed? Who's going to pay for the development of the competencies? How does it meet the Common Core standards? There's so, so many questions.
In terms of funding, I think the law says the parents will pay for that. I think that's pretty clear.
Says they'll pay for the alternative. That means if they want a different book, do they pay for everyone in the classroom to have that different book, or do they pay for their own child to have that book? Do they pay for the time to develop the tests, the competencies, so that they meet state standards? There's a lot involved when you change something in the curriculum.
I do wonder about that one aspect of the cost, Scott. Supporters of this law have been very clear. This is all on the parents if they want this. But time is money. Teachers and administrators will have to take time out from their other duties to do this. So is there a cost ultimately associated with this new law?
Well, the parents are already bearing a large cost. They pay their property taxes. They're going to pay the cost of the extra material and whatever teaching time and assistance is required for the child. The alternative, I mean, let's not forget what the alternative is that that parent will be forced to pull their child out of the school system, which is going to then in turn actually cost the school money. It's going to shrink enrollment, so all the formulas based on enrollment in the school will mean less state aid, it'll mean less revenue. If that parent may move out of town, for example, to a tuitioning town, for example, to give their child other options like private schools. So let's talk about that loss of potential revenue.
Is it fair to say that there's no cost involved to the schools on this?
Well, there's probably going to be some cost. I mean, you're going to have to sit down with the parent and hash through this process, and that, of course, is going to cost time. But again, who is the school serving? The school is not serving itself. It's serving the parents who are the customers. So to spend time with your customers, to me, is just good business sense.
Let's take another call. Again, our number 1-800-892-6477. Andrew from Bradford is with us. Hi, Andrew. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange, and thanks for waiting.
Hi, yes. I'm a school board representative and a parent of a student in the Kearsarge Regional School District, and I have to take issue with the notion that parents are the ultimate client. It's been stated on your show a little bit ago by one of your people that the parents spend the most time with their children. I'm self-employed, and I spend an enormous amount of time with my child, but I realize as she's getting older and spending more and more time in more and more complicated subject areas that I don't have the level of quality time that I could with her, and I'm fundamentally at most liberty compared to most parents who may have jobs or other responsibilities. The other big concern as a school board member I have is we're constantly, because of downshifting of costs from the state and unfunded mandates, districts are being asked to do more with a lot less, and this becomes one of these issues that is about resources. And if any parent at any time can question any aspect of curriculum, I'm concerned that that's just going to take create an enormous demand on the limited resources we currently have.
Thanks, Andrew, for the call. So, Rhonda, time concerns, which we've talked about, but also concerns that he doesn't really understand some of the higher-level material, and boy, I can relate to that.
Well, that's why the teacher is supposedly the expert. I mean, we can't have people coming in that know more than the teacher in regards to the material, in regards to how it should be taught, in regards to how to differentiate the instruction for the ability levels. You have paid somebody, or you've hired somebody that has those degrees, that has that work experience, that knows what they are doing. He's correct.
I want to take another call. This is John in Salem. Andrew, thanks for that one. John, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks. A little late for the conversation today, so I haven't heard everything. I'm going to go back and check it off the web later tonight. Sounds like a great topic. I have a fifth grader in Salem, and we've been trying to get her more advanced math studies for the last 5 years, and have gotten absolutely nowhere with that. There's no tracking at all in the elementary schools, at least not our school in Salem, and no interest in providing anything beyond the standard curriculum
So you have tried to use the current system to get better course materials for a daughter, and no luck there.
Yeah, we've talked to the principal. We've talked directly to every teacher that she's had since first grade and has gotten nowhere. So anything that will help that along, I'm in favor of.
All right, John, thanks for calling in. And what do you think, Scott? Will this law help parents like John who want more challenging material and have a hard time getting it?
Yes, absolutely. It's going to reaffirm the parents' role in education. And right now, you know, his choices are limited. If the school district is not willing to work with that parent, his choices are what? Move, sell his house, move to another district, or incur the additional cost of private school or tutoring above and beyond the property taxes he's already paying. So barring those two options, the school system has to be willing to work with parents, and this bill reaffirms that right.
What do you think, Rhonda, that this law presents a warning, a sort of crying out from parents like our caller who want teachers to take a harder look at what they're using for materials, how they're working with individual kids? This is kind of a warning shot, like, hey, folks, wake up. We need more from you here.
I'm not sure I understand your question.
My question is, does this law, the fact that it passed by large margins, enough to override a veto, does it reflect a real frustration with the public schools like we hear from our caller, John?
Perhaps it does. I think that it's quite the time for our nation as a whole to be piling on to public education. You know, we didn't crash the economy, but schools are being blamed or teachers are being blamed for everything. It may indeed be, but I think that if the research had been done, especially here in New Hampshire, the legislators would have found out that for the most part, differentiated instruction around within the classroom, the teacher's ability to meet the needs of most of the students. And as Mark Joyce had said earlier, we're talking about the public good here, not the good of one specific child in the classroom. The teacher has to reach the entire class.
Well, John, thanks for that call. And I'm flooded with emails here, and I want to thank everybody who emailed. I won't get to all of them, but here's one from Elizabeth in Holderness, who says, proponents of this law suggest that the customer is always right and therefore should be able to object when the product or service isn't satisfying them. Proponents suggest that taxpayers are the customers in this situation, and one of your guests suggests that it's absurd to keep folks with no relevant professional educational experience from exercising control over the public school curriculum. Elizabeth says, I am a taxpayer and therefore a customer and a New Hampshire citizen who believes my life is impacted by the quality of the education of my fellow citizens. She says, given all that, doesn't it make sense to also allow me as a customer to object to specific material being taught in the public schools, even though I don't have kids in the schools? Elizabeth says, why should parents be the only customers who have such a direct say? We have another emailer who has a similar question, doesn't have kids in the schools, but says, hey, I'm a taxpayer. I'm helping out too. Can I chime in as well? What do you think, Scott? Does this open the door to people who don't have kids to have a say in classroom materials?
Well, that door is already open in your local school board. Anybody can run, whether you have a child in the school system or not, and serve and make decisions on curriculum and the cost of schools. The issue is that the problem more directly obviously affects parents who have children in the school. They're the ones who have to ensure that their child is getting the education that they need and deserve. And since that burden ultimately falls on that parent, they need all the tools available to help them make that determination.
You know, we've been talking about parental rights. Here's an email from Ray who talks about parental responsibilities, and I want to share it with both of you. He says, could you set up a situation where all students have an individual education plan, an IEP? Parents sign on and agree to share in the instruction and supplemental activities outside of school. The IEPs conform to grade level expectations of the New Hampshire DOE. Students are tested against those standards, and the parents, this is all capital from Ray, the parents share in the responsibility if adequate yearly progress is not achieved. What do you think about Ray's idea, Rhonda?
It's a very interesting idea. Again, the time constraints come into play there. For instance, when would the teacher be able to review the plans for each and every individual student in his
You'd have
or
to have
classroom?
A lot smaller classes.
Oh, absolutely.
10 kids to a class.
Exactly.
So a good idea, but not feasible?
It's an interesting idea.
What do you think, Scott?
Well, in today's technological age now, where the internet and online learning is booming and blossoming right now, where in fact you are providing customized learning opportunities through the internet, I'd like to see schools innovate. I think this will be a way to for parents to put pressures on school systems to innovate in new ways and make education more custom-tailored.
All right. Well, thanks again for all those emails. And let's take another caller. This is Kathy waiting in Concord. Hi, Kathy. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm concerned by the tone of each of your guests. That this law sort of turns the relationship between parents and teachers into an adversarial one. Each side is saying teachers know best how to teach this kid and the parents know best how to teach this kid. And I've had experience actually this year with both of my children and where there were needs that needed to be met. And I contacted the teacher. We've been discussing things throughout the year and actually have brought in the vice principal and other people where I have offered, you know, said, can you explain to me why you're teaching this in this way? Or I need you to understand that this isn't working for my son, or this is what he's able to do, or this is what my daughter is able to do. I've gotten explanations from them. I've offered materials here. This is something that we were trying at home. They've been very open to saying, okay, we'll see how we can work this into what's already going on, or we're sharing information. We're cooperating together to try and provide the best environment for educating my kids. And I feel like this law sort of turns it into an adversarial thing where people are getting territorial. And I think that systems already exist for this cooperative relationship to go on. And obviously,
Kathy, can I ask you a quick question? I'm sorry to interrupt you, but just in the interest of time. So you've had some good results. We heard from an earlier caller who said he's tried and tried to get alternative materials for his daughter and no results. So he feels like this law is going to help him out.
I think that having the law in place sort of it doesn't change anything, I guess is what I'm saying. It changes the dynamics where it makes it more adversarial, but it ultimately, if I hadn't been able to, and going forward, if I am not able to come to an agreement with the teachers, this is working great for my kid, or if everybody agrees we're doing the best we can and it's not working for you, kid, you pull your kid out, you have to do some homeschooling, you supplement, you may have to send them elsewhere. I don't really see where this law is helpful, and I only see that it changes the dynamic.
All right. Kathy, thanks a lot. Scott, quick thoughts from you?
Well, I've never said that every parent out there knows better than teachers. In fact, I said quite the opposite in that this opens up a process and dialogue that the school has to recognize the parents' right to ensure that that they're getting the proper education for their child. There's going to be a dialogue, and the parent may very well be educated in terms of what exactly the school is doing. But at the end of the day, that parent is the one who has to be responsible for his or her child being educated, and that's what this law reaffirms.
Quick thought from you, Rhonda, and then I have.
In all my years of teaching, that dialogue has always existed between parents and teachers.
That dialogue is already there, so the law doesn't
absolutely
isn't necessary, in your opinion.
Exactly.
Here's a comment that was posted on our Facebook site today. This is from Kathy. She says, "Great discussion. I think our society is skeptical of expertise, so underlying this law is a suspicion of the expertise of teachers." That's the nice way to put it. The nasty way, Kathy says, to put it is that our society does not respect teachers. I wish people who criticize teachers would be forced to spend a year in a classroom so they could get a realistic picture of what the job entails. Thanks, Kathy, for that comment on our Facebook page. What do you think, Scott?
Well, I understand.
Is this a big diss of teachers?
No, not at all. And we understand that teachers are working very hard to educate our children. But at the same time, when you have a large public school system where you're teaching so many different people and trying to teach them all the same time, you need some flexibility. And I think that given the vast majorities that this law passed by, I think clearly that is a sign of people out there who feel that the system is not providing the flexibility it fully needs to fully educate our children, and that this will empower parents to become more involved, number one, and number two, the parents that are involved give them more flexibility to make sure their children are getting the education they deserve and need.
Well, and Scott mentioned the vast majorities that this did pass by. And Rhonda, it is law. It has been passed. We've heard your objections. We've heard the objections of some of our callers and emailers. But this is the law of the land. So now what do teachers do? You got to get used to it and move on.
Well,
unless you file a lawsuit to get this thing wiped off the books. I don't know.
You always have to have hope that the legislature will look at the ramifications of this and they perhaps may be able to tweak the law, because as it stands, Laura, we do view this as another attack on public education and the constitutional right of all children in New Hampshire to a quality public education.
So right now, teachers, though, do have to comply. School districts have to comply. Principals have to comply and respect the wishes of the parents who come to them. So what's the next step for educators in New Hampshire on this?
Some of it is wait and see. We'll wait and see how many parents object. What, you know, do you have an entire classroom with six or seven parents objecting and they each want their own specific curriculum taught to their child? We're going to have to look and see how it plays out.
So it may not be used by that many parents in the end.
I'm worried about what exactly the law was put in place to do in the long run.
Scott, real quick, what do you think? How many parents are going to take advantage of this?
Well,
a lot, a little?
You know, I agree that we don't really know, but, you know, the NEA in their press release said, you know, on the one hand says it's going to create chaos in the school system, implying that a lot of people are going to take advantage, but at the same time say, well, the law is limiting because parents have to pay for the alternative curriculum. You can't have it both ways.
Well, we'll see what happens, and maybe there'll be a follow-up down the line if some of these cases come forward. Thank you, both of you, very much for coming in today. I sure appreciate it. Scott, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Scott Moody, Vice President of Policy at Cornerstone Policy Research. And Rhonda, thank you for coming in once again.
Thanks, Laura.
Rhonda Wesolowski, President of the New Hampshire Chapter of the National Education Association. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our intern is Ryan Lassard. The Exchange is now on Facebook. Go to our page to continue the conversation. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. Our executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.